At this time last year, executives were hoping and planning to have everyone return to work around Memorial Day. For most organizations, these plans unfortunately came and went quickly, along with the prospect of fall or even the beginning of 2021. Now that more and more people are being vaccinated each day, organizations are planning the return to work again. Colleges and universities like UW-Milwaukee are planning to have students, faculty, and staff all return for a quote-unquote normal in-person semester starting in the fall. Organizations are also starting to bring people back in larger numbers, and plans for this are accelerating. Improving the speed of getting everyone aligned and on the same page is one of the benefits executives see in bringing people back to the office. Research also shows the pandemic has had a negative impact on so many people due to the isolation we've all experienced. While returning to work may sound easy on the surface, it presents some leadership challenges, which is what we'll be talking about today. With me are two HR leaders to discuss how organizations and individuals can prepare for returning to work. My first guest is Annette Adams, Chief Human Resources Officer at Mortgage Guaranty Insurance Corporation, or MGIC. And my second guest is Wendy Kamerling, former Vice President of Human Resources for Johnson Controls, who after decades of leading in multinational organizations, launched Bridges Consulting to continue her work coaching executives and helping organizations maximize their potential. Thank you, Annette and Wendy, for taking time out on this important topic.
Pleasure
Thank
to be
you
here.
For the opportunity, Mark. Thank you.
Let's start off with a high-level question. With no playbook and few best practices to point to, aside from the social distancing guidelines, what challenges do senior executives face when we're trying to return to work quickly and safely, and what are some of the key things they should be thinking about?
I can go ahead and get started with that one, Mike. Thank you. It's certainly a good way for us to kick off the conversation, and every organization is having this discussion right now, because to your point, there is not a playbook. And so we're figuring out the rules in really uncharted territory and a really interesting point in time. And who would have thought that we'd be here 13 months later and still facing the possibility that we may not be headed back into the offices anytime soon. I've had a number of conversations with fellow heads of HR across the Milwaukee area and even beyond the Milwaukee area. And I think, you know, there's a common theme that we all share, that first and foremost, it is about the safety of our workforce and making sure that that is at the very top of our list in terms of how we are approaching the steps we'll take in bringing people back into the offices. I think the other part of that theme is certainly we're not going to go back to the same way that we worked pre-pandemic. It's going to be a different way in which we operate. And quite frankly, trying to figure out the best way that we as HR leadership and the leadership within the organization can create and strike the right balance for people that still have a desire to work from home in some capacity, while at the same time, there are folks that do want to come back into the office for some period of time, whether it's to collaborate, whether it's to socialize, just the things that really are important to keeping the work moving ahead. So I would say that it's probably harder to plan for bringing people back into the work site than it was getting everybody working from home when this first happened. And we all, the suddenness of it was there. But now we're trying to adapt to just some new issues regarding safety and to what degree will we require or not vaccinations? Will we require or not people to wear masks? Will we require or not people to be in the office a certain number of days during the week? So it's just presented a whole host of questions that are not necessarily easy to answer on the surface. And you know, one question really does lead to another question. So it's a really interesting place for all of us as executives in how we're looking at this.
Thank you, Annette. Wendy here. I'm really appreciating what you're saying about employee safety being uppermost. I also think about customer safety and supplier safety as people go in and out of facilities. Some of the other things that have been on my mind that C-suite leaders, I think, need to be thinking about, and maybe you're having these conversations as well, the resistance that we're hearing for some employees to come back at all. It's becoming a little bit, I think, a recruitment and a retention issue. Employees are saying, wow, you know, if my employer is going to you know, have everybody come back full time on site, I might want to look for another employer that allows me more flexibility. I've been hearing that as I've been talking with people. And the ability to be flexible and the ability to maybe create a bit of more of a hybrid schedule becomes then a recruiting tool for organizations, I believe. Another thing that I've been thinking about too is this productivity debate, and maybe you're hearing it too, Annette and Mike. People that I'm talking to, individual contributors and managers at some levels, are saying, hey, I'm as productive or more productive than I was when I was in the office. And on the flip side, I'm hearing other leaders saying, well, I think our people are about 80% productive working from home. So there is this productivity debate. Has this been a successful experiment for organizations or not? And I think that debate will continue. The last thing that's been on my mind is you mentioned collaboration, Annette, and I think that's right on. That's very much more difficult to do, I think, when people are offsite. Mm-hmm. This whole idea of, do we give people opportunities to work on the business instead of in the business? And I know that's a bit of a cliche these days, but things like innovation, strategic development, and, you know, collaboration in general, we're going to have to make room and time for that. So those are the things I think are on leaders' minds now.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, Wendy. I think to add to that, one of the ways that we're looking at it is interesting, right? Because I recall years ago when leaders were struggling to get comfortable with having people work from home and had a whole litany of reasons why people couldn't work from home. And there were some were valid and some maybe I look back and say, not so sure that was a valid reason. Now we're in this opposite situation of trying to figure out, well, what's the reason why people have to come into the office? And so it's just a very new dilemma for us. Previously, my point of view was, if you're, for example, an administrative assistant, well, gosh, you have to be in the office because your job is to support executives and you really have to be there in the presence was necessary. And now I'm in this opposite end of saying, well, what is the reason for that individual to have to be into the office at any sense of regularity? So it's a very different way that we have to think about it. And one of the things that we're starting to do kind of in that lens is to think about what are some examples of things that perhaps could be done more effectively coming into the office in terms of that collaboration and getting together, you know, in more of a kind of team setting and safety always being first and foremost, as opposed to what probably does make more sense to do more individual, independent work that could be still done in the home setting. So trying to almost come up with a few examples of how that can come to light in more of this home versus hub concept, if you will. But we're also finding what some of our coworkers have said too is that they do want to come into the office, but they want to do it knowing that to some degree there will be some other people there. So it's a little bit of this weird dynamic of, I want to come in the office. I still want to be safe. I still want to make sure that the environment is conducive for me to come into the office. But I really don't want to be there if I'm going to be working by myself. Then I might as well just stay at home. So it's this interesting dynamic of, do we start to direct certain days or certain points in time or certain teams where we would suggest, hey, these might be some opportunities to bring folks together to work and be able to be collaborative. So again, it's a very different muscle that we're having to stretch here and how we're thinking about some of being intentional, but at the same time, still offering up some degree of, you know, flexibility and this hybrid nature of which we, I think we're all trying to figure out the right balance in how we set that up.
Yeah, and I do really see HR having a strong role in this. Playing that middle position of talking mm-hmm. to managers and saying, okay, what really does need to be done in the office and how mm-hmm. often? Mm-hmm. And then talking mm-hmm. to employees and saying, all right, at some point you will be needing to come into the office and, you know, what is your best productivity there? So I really see a role for HR. The other thing your comment sort of sparked with me was, how might work spaces be different over time? Yeah. You know, maybe we won't have individual QBs or individual offices so much anymore, but people are doing that individual work at home. And then the workspace that they come into is much more collaborative, much more open. I see sort of whiteboards all over the place, smart boards, and that becomes your collaboration and innovation space. So yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the workplace itself, just how it's appointed, is going to be morphing over time here.
Yeah, exactly. We're having that same conversation. I was actually just talking to a peer yesterday, one of the larger organizations in Milwaukee, and she was sharing with me that as she's had conversations around space, that she's already starting to hear some of our peers in HR sharing that perhaps some decisions were made too soon in terms of either selling off parts of building spaces or renting out building spaces without perhaps taking into consideration, to your point, Wendy, we may find ourselves in need of just as much space, but because we're spreading out and because it's more collaborative spaces as opposed to the typical kind of cubicle environment that we're very familiar with, we really have to think about that. And that's a whole another area of conversation that I think everyone is having as to what to do with your building space and then how to set it up in a way that does accommodate this greater degree of collaboration. But even going so far as to say, will there be certain days of the week or times in the week where the building is maybe just closed altogether because of the cost of sustaining the infrastructure that goes into that? So again, like I said, one thing just kind of leans into a whole nother series of questions that you were all just trying to figure out.
Yeah, many of my conversations with clients have echoed what you're both talking about. I recently read an article stating that when things open up after the pandemic, there could be a significant percent of the population that doesn't want to come back to work, whether it be out of fear or if they feel like, as you had said, they could do their job effectively from home as they once did in the office. Another article said almost half of the people surveyed would leave their organization if a flexible or hybrid model wasn't made available. Since we've talked about this a little bit, I'd like to expand on this. How can organizations navigate this and demonstrate fairness when it comes to who can work from home and who needs to be at the office?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. I think what I would say within MGIC, we're at a bit of an advantage here in that the nature of the work is not one that necessarily requires people to be in an office setting or within the work environment, if you will. So we don't have customer interactions that we would if we were in a bank and you have bank tellers or, you know, in other sorts of industries and organizations where you do have a need and you've got folks that do have to be physically on site as a result of that. And I can appreciate, having come from my past background in retail, you can't avoid the fact that some people do have to come into the actual physical workspace and just try to address that as best as you possibly can. For us, it's been less about any sort of concerns from what's equitable and the right way to do it. My but to that is knowing that we're going into a hybrid, very likely a hybrid situation, you do have to be attentive to any semblance of bit of haves and have-nots. And what I mean by that is when you have some people that come into the office, and I'll just use meetings as an example, if there's a collaborative meeting and you have some people coming into the office, but not everybody feels comfortable coming into the office, you have to still acknowledge a person's own individual comfort level in gathering and their own set of circumstances and be aware as a leader, aware as a coworker of, you know, people's a person's personal preference so that there isn't any sort of unintended bias or kind of negative response or kind of counter to still embracing inclusion in some form. So we're kind of going down this territory right now of a whole different, I guess, element of inclusiveness as we think about the way in which we're going to be working and have to be really attentive to the fact that some people will be able to gather and some people won't be able to gather, but you have to make sure that they're still a part of the conversation and be aware of, your own behaviors and attitudes towards that. And so that's just a whole nother, when I think about a lot of work that's continuing to happen in around inclusiveness, like this is another area that we've got to pay attention to.
Yeah, even though matrixed reporting structures and global teams have been around for a long time, some people do really worry about that favoritism maybe showing up about people who decide to come to the office each day versus the people who decide to work remotely. Wendy, what thoughts do you have about helping prevent favoritism of workers based on where they're working?
Yeah, I think this is a very real thing. And I liked what Annette was saying before about kind of the inclusiveness. You know, we're going to be thinking about employees in different categories. First is the job that they do and how conducive is that to working remotely or in person? What are their individual circumstances, be it health, be it pre-existing condition, whatever, distance from the office? So there's going to be different circumstances for different people, for sure. The thing that I keep getting struck with, though, and Annette, correct me if you think I'm wrong here, but I think about the C-suite people that I've worked with in my career and continue to. I think there is going to be some of this unconscious bias of, oh, I see Sally Sue, she's here every day. She comes in, she's doing the, and I got Joe Blow at home. And, do I start looking at Sally Sue as somebody that is more committed, is more interested, is more perhaps upwardly mobile? Plus, Sally Sue has this advantage of C-suite leaders stopping in, talking with her, gathering her ideas and her opinions in sort of this informal way that just happens when you're in the office. And Joe Blow at home doesn't have that. I mean, his manager would have to intentionally create a call to, oh, I want your opinion too, and maybe you should be on this project. So I think there is that possibility, probably a very real possibility, that the people that are present in the manager's and C-suite's eyes are going to potentially get more opportunities and certainly more visibility and maybe be thought of in a way that is, well, this person is really on the team. They're really aligned. They're really upwardly mobile. And to me, it really is going to be incumbent upon the person that decides to work from home, either by necessity or by choice, to be intentional about how they make those connections, how they reach out, talk to their manager, talk to the C-suite, ask questions, volunteer for projects. There's going to be some intentionality, I think, that these folks are going to have to take just so that there isn't this have or have not. I think you put it very well, Annette.
Yeah, completely agree, Wendy. And I think you alluded to it too, Mike. This is not necessarily brand new. It's just very much heightened the attention that we have to give to this because of how much more prevalent the idea of hybrid work environments will be in this future state as opposed to kind of where we've been. And these are real concerns, real things that we have to be thinking about as leaders, as HR practitioners, and pay very close attention to. And so certainly we all had work that had to happen early on when we first shut down the offices and sent everybody home and had everybody start to work from home. That was very new. I can say it was very new for MGIC because it had not been part of the culture of the organization to, you know, have people working from home. So that was a strong pivot that had to happen. And so to what you're bringing up, Wendy, a lot of effort placed on helping leaders, helping managers acclimate to this idea of you're not going to see your people every day. Like this is, you have to trust and we have to get comfortable with that. And maybe traditional kind of way of working from 8 to 5 during the day, that's just not going to happen the same way because people have kids, they have other things that are going on that they're kind of dealing with. And so we spent a lot of time initially to help get people comfortable with that. And I think we've settled into that, but we're all kind of on the same playing field right now, right? We're all working from home for the most part. And occasionally, you know, a few of us do go into the office once in a while, but for the most part, we're on the same playing field. That playing field is going to be shifting and it is going to create these new dynamics that we have to, like you said, be very attentive to. But I also say that it's very much showing up in how we're hiring talent more recently too, where there's a much greater degree of openness to hiring talent that's not necessarily right in the local area, and to what degree then, what are those expectations for that talent in terms of coming into corporate office periodically or not, and what would be the reasons why they may be asked or required to come in, and if they are asked or required to come in, is that on their dime, is it on our dime? So just that's a whole nother element that everyone has to kind of get sorted through in terms of, well, how is this going to continue to work going forward? And to what degree, you know, I fully expect, and I think we've had it within our company, and I think most companies have, there have been some people within the workforce that have, during this 13 months, they've moved to other locations, whether it was intended to be temporary or now it's kind of looking like, well, I've been okay, I've been doing this and it seems to be working fine. So maybe I just take up permanent residence wherever I may be. And that's happening. It's a real thing. So it's really changing those dynamics so significantly.
I do like to hear those stories about organizations really widening their perspective when it comes to talent and looking at people who maybe aren't in their backyards and people who don't have to come to their headquarters or to their office facility every day or their manufacturing facility. I think it really just opens up a lot of possibilities for work and for people. I also agree with some of what you said, or some of what both of you said earlier, in that it's the individual's responsibility to make sure that they're getting the visibility they need. At the same time, I also hope that leaders take it to heart and help the people who are not coming into the office every day get that visibility that they should have as well. Earlier, you mentioned there could be some financial benefit to having workers stay at home and reducing the amount of office space needed. How much of the decision around returning to work should be a financial one?
That's a great question, Mike. I would say, from where my vantage point within our organization, very little of the decision has been a financial one. My tendency is to feel that is a good thing, quite frankly. I think we have to do what's best at the end of the day for the coworkers, for our customers. We do have to figure out and take the appropriate steps to how we will continue to work going forward. I'm not sure how long we can sustain that. I think as I was having conversations recently with my leadership, acknowledge that we have to plan for the best situation that we can come yet this year, later this year, maybe after Labor Day. I'm not as optimistic about Labor Day as I had been a couple of weeks ago, quite frankly, but whether it's end of the year or into next year, we'll do the best we can in terms of planning for people coming back and what that's going to look like. I would expect, though, 12, 18 months after whatever that date is, things will look even different at that point in time. You know, to whatever degree people decide that they want to make some different decisions around how they work and where they work. And so this is something that does not have a definitive end to it. And we have to keep paying very close attention to what progresses along the way. We're not out of this pandemic yet. And unfortunately, I think we're going to continue to deal with the consequences of it for some period of time. So that's what makes it really difficult in the planning. So my personal opinion, and I'm actually glad that this is the approach that MJC has taken, is to not let the financial part kind of lead the storyline for us, and to rather, it has been all about the safety. It has been about the health. It has been about making sure that people are equipped with what they need in order to do the work, and how we're facilitating the business on behalf of our customers. That's been first and foremost, and it needs to continue to be first and foremost.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing too. Safety of employees first, and also just how do we service the customer in a way that's safe for us and safe for them. So yeah, those are the big priorities that I'm hearing.
I love to hear that. Anytime you can focus on the customer is exactly what you should be doing. And obviously the safety of your employees too. How much of what we've learned during COVID-19 about working remotely can and should be kept?
I'm thinking these tools that we have been using technologically will continue. Meetings seem to be effectively happening, via Zoom, via Microsoft Teams, via other tools. I think maybe they are actually even a little bit more productive. People seem to want to get on and get off. I was talking to a salesperson the other day, and he said, you know, Wendy, pre-COVID, I could call on two or three customers if they were all kind of clustered around. You know, I'm driving from place to place. If I had to fly, I could only maybe see one. He said, now I can visit with nine customers each day using the Zoom tool. Now, I don't think it is going to turn out to be one or the other exclusively, but that these tools are available to help us be more productive and more efficient, I think that's going to stay. I think the other thing that's going to be very interesting to see what happens is business travel. Mm-hmm. As I've been talking to people that do travel for customers or suppliers, they're finding it fairly effective to be working remotely and virtually, but yet, even, you know, that initial meeting with the customer, the client, a tour of the facility, that I think people say, yeah, we've got to have that. That's very important and critical. But it probably doesn't mean I have to go every month or every quarter. So I would see business travel, the whole complexion of that changing quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree with Wendy. I think if nothing else, what has, you know, when you try to look for silver lining and kind of what's coming out of this, what I would say is I am hearing quite a bit, and I'm seeing it within our organization as well, added attention to how we communicate and how we collaborate within the organizations. So being more intentional in sending out communication to the workforce. I'd say we've done more in terms of listening sessions, focus groups, surveys, getting the pulse and the engagement of our workforce has been heightened. And I'd like to see that continue because, quite frankly, that's where I think our coworkers have given us very complimentary feedback that they're happy that we are checking in and we're doing more of that than what we had done previously. Not that it wasn't important to us. You know, there was always some of those mechanisms happening, but now it's becoming more commonplace and it's more intentional than it had been before. So, and I think that's a good thing. It's requiring this new behavior of, you know what, I can't have this water cooler conversation and I can't get people in the lunchroom together. So I have to make this added attempt and these efforts in order to ensure that I'm connecting with people in different ways. It has also required, I believe, organizations to revisit their technology, whether it's their intranet solutions, whether it's, to Wendy's point, their video platforms, and other things that were maybe there in the past or maybe not quite as advanced as they could be. So I look at those as all very positive things that are coming out of this and that we have to retain. And again, I think too, it's also forced us in a good way to revisit that notion of, we've always heard it referred to as work-life balance. So that's a bit of a misnomer. I think we all know that, but it has required us to be more open and more respectful of different experiences that we all have. And how we have to somewhat adapt and be comfortable and more trusting of people getting work done and to some degree being able to accept the fact that it's, like I had mentioned earlier, it's not always done in an 8-to-5 schedule because people have other things that are happening. So there's just some really good things that I do believe have happened as a result of this that we are talking about and trying to figure out how to continue to capitalize on and continue to make sure that we're leaning into that in some regard as we're thinking about what this new state is going to look like ahead of us.
Now, I think this sort of virtual environment is asking us to really maybe take the building blocks, these sort of block and tackling that we do as managers and just take it to a different level. I mean, I think mm-hmm. about having clear expectations for people and clear mm-hmm. timelines, you know, the whole SMART goal thing. I mean, that's become so much more important in a virtual environment, mm-hmm. as well as feedback on what's going well and what isn't. And we've been saying a lot of intentional, being intentional in this call, but yeah, being intentional about checking in with people, you know, not mm-hmm. just the how's the work going, how are you doing? and yeah. how, you know, how are things going with you, with your technology platform, all of that, and then giving people feedback on the work. And so, I mean, these are just good practices anyway, but I think our virtual environment is heightening the need for good practice around this.
With different approaches regarding the return to work being adopted, how much should organizations worry about talent moving to other companies, and what can be done to help people?
Annette said the word flexibility earlier, and I think that is paramount. As organizations think about how do I need to get this work done, being flexible in terms of the how and listening to people's situations. To me, if people feel heard, they understand why or why not. They can be at home or not. They understand kind of how they fit into the overall vision. Then we're going to be able to keep and retain people. But if they feel like decisions are sort of arbitrary, or it's a one size fits all, or, you know, by golly, on the 7th of September, you're back in the office, come hell or high water, that's going to turn people off. And those employers are going to have people at risk, I believe.
Yeah, I agree with what Wendy has described there. We're very conscientious of whatever decision we make. People, well, you know, obviously people are paying very close attention. They're curious. They want to know what's going to be expected. Can I work from home 100% all the time? So, you know, people are very much paying attention to that. And I think to what you described, Wendy, we have to ensure that we have a strong rationale for whatever decision we end up making as to what degree we would require or not require, or establish guidelines and parameters around that, and that are, I'd say, reasonable, explainable, that people, for the most part, the vast majority of our coworkers could easily understand, appreciate, and respect. And you're right, and I think that's where, again, you know, as I look at the upside of this, it has opened up the ability to look at talent a little bit differently, explore talent outside of just the Milwaukee area, though we always want to look at Milwaukee first. But where there's opportunities outside of Milwaukee, we've been much more open to that than perhaps we had been in the past, and embracing that. At the same time, I would also say one of the things that the employers are also maybe scratching their heads on right now is to what degree this may affect succession planning or kind of other aspects, especially as it pertains to maybe a portion of the population that were nearing retirement. And so to some degree, you know, there are some individuals that are maybe going to hold off on that a little bit longer, given the way in which we're working today. So how does that play into any other planning around kind of talent needs or changes within the organization? And so that's just, you know, it's another thing that I think companies are starting to talk about, that I'm starting to read about as well, that people are holding off on retirement and not necessarily using their PTO time. And there's just a whole host of other things that are happening. And I'm not suggesting those are bad things. It's just, again, it's indicative of another degree of change that, and things that are happening that we might not have anticipated previously, and just paying attention to those things.
Yeah, I think providing some details and some insight as to the decision-making process is going to go real far in most organizations and with most people. And just being flexible, like you said, as well as maybe even rewarding people for doing the right thing, whether they're, you know, working remotely or not. So mm-hmm. hopefully we'll see that in the future here real soon. Before we end our conversation, I have one final question. What single piece of advice can you give to leaders about navigating the return to work and helping everyone in the organization feel good about it and also be as productive as possible?
For me, it's kind of the same as it was. I mean, I like to think about keeping people focused on the vision. What are we trying to do as an organization? Why is that work important in the world today? What role do you play? I mean, regardless if I'm working at home or if I'm working in the office or I've got some hybrid thing going on, I need to know, you know, what is it that we're trying to do and how do I fit into that? And if I feel connected, and I love the communication things that you were talking about before, Annette, that your organization is doing, keeping people connected, keeping them aligned with overall vision and mission and sort of that elusive why. To me, that is a great retention tool. And again, that's probably something that we needed to be doing all through our working lives. But in this sort of virtual environment, connecting people to mission, I think, is even more critical.
Yeah, well stated, Wendy. I don't think I have much that I could add beyond that, and completely agree that that has to be. And I think we've said that somewhat all along here, and just that being intentional and being very thoughtful and making sure that leaders are embracing that notion of, yes, we're working different, but at the same time, we still have our company priorities. We still, you know, are looking to achieve results. It may look different in how we're getting there, and we have to continue to adapt to that and acknowledge that this is something that we'll make a lot of decisions along the way. We'll have to be, you know, open to some degree of shifting and agility that comes along with it. But I think it's sparking just behaviors that, to your point, Wendy, are just part of being a leader within a company, and it's probably reinforcing and giving greater much needed attention to how that shows up and how that takes shape.
Annette and Wendy, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, experiences, and observations on this important topic. You've given us all some things to think about as the economy opens up more and we create a new normal in how we work. As always, I'd like to thank everyone for listening. We wish you the best of luck as you move forward on your leadership journey. Please subscribe to our podcast and check back regularly for additional episodes.